listening to a podcast from The National.
The eyes of the football world will be focused on Russia this summer as 32 nations compete in the 2018 World Cup. In this World Cup special Extra Time podcast, we'll be looking over the upcoming tournament as our very own John McCauley prepares to set sail for Russia. I'm your host, John Turner. Joining me in the studio, of course, it is John McCauley.
Hey guys, how you doing?
And Steve Luckings.
Hello, mate.
How you guys doing?
Yeah, okay.
All good, yeah. We just finished filming the quiz.
I know, yeah.
How did that go?
Surprise, we're all talking to each other.
Yeah. Hang about just in there. Kev was a very vigilant points keeper, so well done there. Right, John, let's discuss your upcoming trip. Excited?
Yeah, getting there.
Take us back to kind of where it all started. Of course, you're going off to Russia, but you've been throughout the whole qualification process as well.
Yeah, it started September 2016, I think it was, in Saitama, in Japan, with the UAE kicking off the third round of their qualification against Japan, obviously, and they got it probably one of their most famous wins, especially one of their most famous wins away from home. And that's where kind of everyone was hoping that this was going to be the...
Did you think that after seeing that result? Because like you say, it was pretty seismic. Did you think, yeah, I'm going to be going to Russia watching the UAE?
I'd be lying if I said yes, to be honest, because it was right at the beginning of the qualification, as I said, the third round, and there was a long, long way to go. It was a kind of freak result as well, because Japan absolutely laid siege to the UAE's goal.
Didn't they have a decent penalty shout? Was it a goal disallowed?
It was a goal disallowed that was about 6 yards over the line that the referee didn't see, that Kaladisa, the goalkeeper, clawed back out. So it was amazing to be there, and the players and the management and everyone afterwards, they were ecstatic with the result, and rightly so. But it very quickly changed, unfortunately. They lost, I think, they definitely lost against Australia in their next game at home, Tim Cahill scoring quite late on. And then they lost to Saudi, which was the big one in Jeddah in October, that October, which was, I think, their fourth match. So it was an uphill battle from there. And really, the final nail in the coffin was their draw with Thailand, I think last June, so 12 months ago. And unfortunately, they're not going to be there. So 1990 remains the only time that UAE have ever been there.
And you've been speaking to a few prominent UAE Emirati figures that have featured in World Cups, haven't you?
Yeah, one. One in Ali Boussain, who's a goalkeeper, very, very well respected goalkeeper worldwide, who was at the World Cup in 94, 98 and 2002. I think he did seven matches altogether. He was referee, sorry, for seven matches. He was fourth official for other ones. I met him a couple of weeks ago and had a good chat with him. And he was fantastic. Some of the anecdotes were absolutely brilliant, telling me about... I won't ruin it, obviously, but he's refereed the 1998 semi-final between Brazil and the Netherlands, which is pretty impressive.
Did he have any decent memorabilia? Like, this was the whistle I used to send someone off.
Or, I had asked.
Well, that'd be a red card, wouldn't it? No,
we weren't in his house, unfortunately, and he said he had all the souvenirs in a box in his house, so he doesn't keep them prominently, he doesn't keep them on display, but unfortunately we didn't get a chance to see
them. I wear them all the time.
let us know when he calls you to have a look at them. We'll come round and have a look with you. So John, when are you heading off? You're heading off on Saturday, right?
Yes, early Saturday.
Everything's all organised, ready to go. I mean, what's the process been like in terms of organising, I mean, everything, particularly in terms of, has it been dealing with FIFA, or how's it all worked?
Well, it first starts with... every association around the world gets an allocation for the media. Obviously, if your country's represented, you will get more than a country that isn't. So the UAE not being there, as we said, they were given five slots, I think. And they kindly, after a little bit of persuasion, agreed to give us one. And that started back in January, I think, was the process. Or maybe December, sorry, was the process. We got told at the end of January that, yes, in fact, we'd got one of those. And then it was up to us to organise everything. And basically what happens is the FA give you a code that you go to FIFA with, and you say the FA have permitted us to go and to represent the association. And then FIFA then decide whether or not that they'll give you the accreditation, but you're 90% sure that you're going to get it. And then it was down to us to organise everything, the travel.
And that's been smooth sailing, hasn't it?
Well, because Russia's so vast, obviously, it's there's been a lot of Google Maps and things like that.
I was going to ask, so what about in terms of like visa process and
the visa process is an experience in itself. So,
it's a process.
Yeah, so I have to say FIFA, they do their bit, so they keep it as easy or as straightforward as they think they can keep it. But then obviously you go to the Russian embassy or the consulate, you go to their website and you fill out the application form. But the application form was mammoth and so extensive. It was asking, I think I've said to you before, Steve, what they asked you. One of the questions was, or one of the parts to fill in was, list every country that you've been to in the past 10 years, the reasons why you went there and the dates that you went, which, incredible. You know, was a bit of a chore. So much so that they give you
trying to look at the faded stamp on your passport.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And because I'll be staying in a couple of Airbnb apartments, you then have to...
We couldn't stretch the budget.
You have to... go to your host and get your host to give you their details, their date of birth, birthplace, all of that kind of stuff. And so, as I said, it was pretty rigorous. But
well, the scrutiny is pretty meticulous then.
Yeah, which should be kind of reassuring. At the time, it was a little bit frustrating, but, you know, that's all done. Once you fill that out, you then go to the embassy here, the Russian consulate, and get it sorted from there. So that was all sorted a couple of weeks ago and then all set for Moscow.
There you go, pack your bags and... So what are your plans? You fly, obviously, like you said, on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Land in Moscow, presumably.
I hope so.
Yeah. Then what do you do? Do you have to go to a registration office? Do you have to report to FIFA? What's the next?
The first thing, for during the World Cup, you have to, every host city that you go to, you have to register. So you can either do that at a hotel or a guest house.
Is that just the media or fans as well?
It's fans as well, I'm 99% sure. But because, as I said, I'm staying at somebody's apartment, I'm going to the police station with them on Saturday to register at a police station and give details, and then that's your pass for Moscow. Land, meet the host that I've been in contact with through emails, etc., and then straight to the police station.
Your usual Saturday night journey. So, I mean, obviously, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, covering a World Cup is, you know, when you realise as a young boy you're not good enough to be a footballer, then I guess when you go into sports reporting on the World Cup is the next best thing. But so obviously you're excited, but are there any concerns like that, you know, in terms of the ease of getting around, the language?
Yeah, how's your Russian shaping up?
I think it's about as much as I got. No, to be honest, the language is going to be a big obstacle, I would say. I've downloaded a couple of apps that will get you the bare minimum. Google Translate will probably be my friend, I would imagine, for a lot of it. But I've been told that I know a few people who went to the Confederations Cup last year, and they said, look, there were a lot of people there kind of, I think they're termed ambassadors for the Confederations Cup or for the World Cup this time. So there'll be a lot of people there kind of hopefully that can speak English and will help me out. Other concerns, obviously the problems that they've had with hooliganism is, you know, that's kind of at the forefront of your mind. But from
you'll
what
be
I've...
right, Cokes.
Yeah, I've got the police as backup apparently. Well, no, but apparently there's going to be a heavy police presence, as you would imagine. There's been special services, special forces have kind of worked with the government. They're clamping down on everything. I think Putin's even had a kind of face-to-face with a few of the ultras, the leaders of the hooligan groups. They obviously were wearing masks. He went, and I'm nearly sure he's had a sit-down with them and said, look, this is basically what we don't want, because we all know the problems that they have had, and that all stems... The kind of clampdown stems a little bit from 2016, from the Euros, whenever England, yeah, obviously, and problems in Marseille. So
it was really, really weird. I was there about a week after that game, and the battlefield scenes that you saw on your television screens couldn't have contrasted any more with the serenity of the port of Marseille.
Is that right?
Afterwards. Yeah, like there was no sign of it. I mean, just the news channels, it looked absolute carnage. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as soon as... Russia and England left, it was lovely.
Yeah, well, look, I hope, obviously, just throughout the tournament that it's not kind of beset by those problems. I don't think it will be. There might be, obviously, skirmishes some places, but hopefully it won't be to the level that we've seen at previous tournaments.
Let's get down to the football then, Corks. What's the order of play for you? What's first up?
First up's the opening ceremony in Russia against Saudi Arabia, which is fantastic. We only got that. So basically, you get accredited for the event, but then you need to apply for each match specifically. So that was left right until the last, we'd applied, but they hadn't given us the green light until about a week ago. So it's going to be the opening match, Luzhniki Stadium, which will be fantastic. An absolute privilege to be there. And then it's trains, planes, and automobiles all around around Russia for the group stages. So it'll be interesting. The majority of the travel will be done by train. And the great thing, again, that FIFA and the Russian transport have done is that they've put on, not just for media, but for fans as well. If you've got a match ticket or accreditation, you get free train travel.
Oh, that's great.
Between the host cities.
So where are you going? Because I realised, like, looking at our galleries of the World Cup stadiums, I know about two places in Russia.
Yeah, well, I'm based in between Moscow and St. Petersburg for a lot of it. So I've got 9 matches during the group stages. I'm based in Moscow and St. Petersburg, as I said. I will go to Novgorod.
Don't know where that is.
And that's about 4 hours, 5 hours on the train away from Moscow. It's east of Moscow. So I'll go to that.
So you're
going to
be racking up some serious air miles.
I think so. I don't think
miles.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other way of getting around it. I've got one, the highlight. I don't know if it'll be a highlight or a low light, but there's a 24-hour train journey, 25-hour train journey from Volgograd to Moscow after Egypt play Saudi Arabia in the last match in Group A.
25 hours on a train.
Yeah. Have you worked out what that is in miles or kilometres? Have you seen?
I haven't, I'm afraid to.
A lot.
Yeah, but look, I think something like that might be an experience anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah,
just something completely out of the norm. So yeah, so as you know, I'll be focusing a lot on Egypt and Saudi Arabia, but I'll have a couple of matches involving Argentina, which is incredible because hopefully we'll get to see Lionel Messi kind of shine on the world stage. That might be his last World Cup. And the second match for Argentina, they play Croatia, and we've got a bit of a local angle there because Slatko Dalic is obviously a Croatia manager. So there's a lot going on, but once you get past the group stages, it kind of the tournament kind of then lays out your plan for you, essentially.
Go on then, give us some predictions. Who are we going to see in the final?
Ooh, it's not very. It's pretty obvious. I would say Brazil, Germany. I would imagine would be my two choices.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
Yeah, no, I've gone for Brazil, Germany, with Germany to win. I had to quickly change my player of the tournament after Leroy Sané was left out by Germany. But yeah, no, I think a lot of people are going for that final, aren't they? That's kind of like the predicted route.
Yeah.
How do you think Neymar will do?
Well, I tipped him in those awful probably predictions that will be proved very wrong. Come the end of the tournament, I tipped him to be player of the tournament. That was before I kind of remembered that he'd been injured since February. But he came back a couple of days ago and at the weekend there and scored an absolutely brilliant goal against Croatia. For me, he's still, you know, after Messi, Ronaldo, he's the third best player in the world when he's fit and on song. So if he's fit and firing and being fit's the big thing, I think he'd be the difference maybe in the player of the tournament for me.
Speaking of fitness issues, as he said, you're going to be pretty close to the Egypt camp, McCauley, most of the time. I mean, Mo Salah, he's claiming a lot of the headlines building up to the tournament last few days. Of course, he was named in the squad yesterday. No great surprise there, but when he's going to be back is the key thing.
Yeah.
And both in terms of interest and, of course, Egypt's chances. A game either side could make all the difference.
Well, that's it. You know, they've got 3 matches. And the first match, I don't think he's going to be back for, and that's against Uruguay on the 15th. So the day after the opening ceremony, the opening match. I don't think he'd be back for that. And then you're rushing him to get back for their match against Russia on June the 19th. And we all know, as I said, Neymar's incredible talent, but Salah has kind of elevated himself to that level, I think, this season, at least anyway. And he's integral to Egypt's hopes of getting out of the group. So it seems a pretty open group. You've got Russia, Saudi Arabia, Egypt and Uruguay. I think we'd all agree Uruguay should win that. And then it's up to
it's interesting, place. Like you say, I mean, Egypt have got to give themselves at least a chance going into the final game against Saudi, where hopefully Salah will be fit enough to play.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, that second place could be up for grabs. But, you know, they've got to take something from their first two games. Like you say, Uruguay, probably massive favourites to progress as winners.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to be in with a shout going into that final game to give Salah a platform to take them even further.
Yeah, and he's, as I said, he's crucial. He's their true kind of world-class player. He's been world-class this season, at least. And if they don't have him, you've got to think he's the guy, remember, who got them to the World Cup, yeah, essentially by scoring two goals against Congo and the penalty.
I see in their squad, they've only taken like one recognised striker, yeah, as well. So, yeah. I mean, they're Marwan very light.
Yeah, they are. They are. But that's one of the criticisms with Hector Cooper, is that he's ultra-defensive. And it's almost he'll let teams have as much of the ball as possible, and then they'll look to defend well and then counter with Salah, and he's the main part of that. He's pivotal to that. But if you take him out of the team, for me, they are going to struggle, and especially against Uruguay. Salah was the X factor that they're not going to have anymore.
Bring back Mido.
Not now.
So, of course, you mentioned you're going to be at the very first game of the whole tournament. Of course, that involves Saudi Arabia against the host Russia's. What can you tell us about the Saudi team, the squad, the coach? How are they kind of shaping up for the tournament?
Well, they've had a pretty strange build-up. It might not be strange to followers of football in the Gulf, but they qualified with Bert van Marwijk as manager. He then left, and they appointed Edgardo Bauza, who was the UAE manager for a very short space of time as well. He lasted even
shorter at Saudi.
yeah, exactly. So they ended up, they went for Juan Antonio Pizzi at the start of the year, and they've had a pretty comprehensive program up until now. They've had five training camps since then. This was always part of the plan anyway. And I think Pizzi is finally getting his message across. He's very much possession focused and pressing high, which the Saudis did not do before that. So it's going to be a real struggle for them. They don't have Nawaf Al Abed, who's their main playmaker. He was injured in January, I think it was, and they've tried to bring him back, and he's been in the squads, but he just wasn't fit, so he didn't even make the final 23. So it doesn't look too good for Saudi, to be fair. From what I've been told, and from what I've kind of read as well about them, is that the Egypt match seems like their priority at the end of the group. It doesn't even matter how they get, as long as they don't suffer, they don't lose pretty badly in the first two games. I think if they were to take something from Egypt, if they were to beat Egypt essentially in that last game, that would really give them something to take going forward into the Asian Cup, which happens in the UAE in next January. So it doesn't look very good for them.
They've not looked that great in their warm-up games, have they? Was it Peru they just lost to 3-0?
It was a difficult one because they didn't put out their anywhere near their full strength team there, but they have struggled in friendlies. They played Italy in a friendly last week, and they were beaten 2-1, but there was enough in the second half that showed that PT is getting his message across, and they're embracing his tactics and his strategy. So look, it's all really dependent. If they were, Russia aren't any great shakes either. They're the two lowest ranked teams in the tournament. So if they were to get something from that, don't lose too heavily to Uruguay. They might have something going into that match with Egypt on the 25th, but I think it's between Saudi and Russia for the bottom slot in Group A, unfortunately.
Right, that's all we've got time for. John, thanks very much for stopping by before heading off. If you've got any space in your suitcase, then I'm sure Steve and I can cram in there.
I don't have a suitcase yet.
Wow. We all forgot something.
And enjoy your trip.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
Well, that's all we have time for this podcast. You can find all of our World Cup coverage, including this podcast, and our upcoming quiz competition on the national website at thenational.ae/sport. Thanks for listening.